Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the allegedly least corrupt country in the world. Incidentally, the coalition partner for New Zealand, Mr. Right Honourable John Banks, or as I like to call him, yeah, Right Honourable John Banks, has been convicted for electoral fraud of some description, and the very same day, the government comes out and says, by the way, our coalition partner, who, by the way, if we kick him out of parliament, we lose our parliamentary majority and can't continue to pass two laws a day that are illegal. We're going to allow him to just stay in parliament for now, even though he's now a convicted criminal. And by the way, we're still the least corrupt country in the world. He might be the former mayor of our largest city, that had $40 billion worth of assets that's now half leveraged. He might be the leader of the coalition government, and he might be the highest ranking Freemason in the country, but that's all right. Because if he gets convicted of a crime, he should still be able to stay out of jail and serve the public so well as he obviously has been doing. Can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I couldn't help but mention that there. We have two very special guests on the show here today. My longtime friend and confidant and fellow scumbaggery exposer. In fact, she's way better at exposing scumbaggery and doing news than me. Her name's Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com. And we also have a very special guest at Suzanne's behest. His name is Glenn Sutphin. So, everybody, welcome to the program today. Suzanne, let's hear from you first.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And Glenn?
Glad to be on your show.
Sterling introduction. Okay, so what's the subject matter for today, Suzanne? You've brought Glenn in here kind of like a hired gun. What's his deal?
Glenn came to me on Facebook with an article that he wrote and published on his website that exposed some interesting connections between the March Against Monsanto at Richmond, Virginia, and Monsanto themselves. So, Glenn, I'd like you to explain the connection, starting with John Lewis, who is head of Renew Richmond, who co-sponsored the event in Richmond, March Against Monsanto.
Okay, well, last year I was involved in the March Against Monsanto, and I met John Lewis and went to the 400-plus people rally there and was pretty impressed, but there were some things that they were kind of saying that kind of didn't josh too well, rose some red flags, but I didn't pay much attention to it. And then the march came back again this year, and I went with Chris Dorsey, who was running for sheriff here in Richmond. And there were some comments made, and then Chris went to ask a question, and people started attacking him and telling him to shut up, that, you know, there's nothing going on with the Renew Richmond. There's nothing going on with anything going on, which was, you know, just really some weird things. And then started looking into it and looked into their sponsors, and that's pretty much where I started finding out that Monsanto is, like, these people were supported like about 90%, according to their website, by Monsanto. So how can Monsanto be funding a march against Monsanto? And just started looking more into it, and that's pretty much when I started writing the article and started getting really deep into it. And
well, when you say this, what connections did you actually find? Who funds Renew Richmond? And the second co-sponsor for this March Against Monsanto in Richmond, Virginia, what was their name?
That was Hands-On. Hands-On. I believe is the, I believe that was their Hands-On. Is Hands-On and Renew Richmond are the two co-sponsors of the March Against Monsanto. And then if you go to their web pages and look at their who they're sponsored by Points of Light. They're sponsored by AmeriCorps. There was just like all these names. And then Renew Richmond proudly sponsors 4-H. Now, that was the really a bombshell there, that I found out that Monsanto's propaganda arm is now 4-H. So that was kind of like the real eye opener. It's like you're supporting Monsanto, but you're marching against Monsanto. So that's kind of, if nothing else, it's very sketchy.
Well, when I took a look at the article that you sent me, you saw that there was funding through Renew Richmond and through Hands On Greater Richmond, through that was coming from Bank of America, that was coming from J.P. Morgan Chase. I'm going down the list: Fidelity, Google, Points of Light, which is what George Bush Sr. was talking about when I was a kid—a 1,000 points of light. The AmeriCorps, Hands On Network. And 4-H. 4-H is the interesting gateway, isn't it, through from Monsanto to Renew Richmond. Why don't you explain that?
Yeah, they Renew Richmond, like I said, they proudly, on their website, they proudly put out that, you know, they sponsor 4-H. You send kids to the 4-H event, and Monsanto, you know, if they're using that as their propaganda arm, what better way to start corrupting the youth than through the 4-H? And I can't really find all the words to express it. I expressed it in my article. It's like, you know, you go through this and you don't expect this. And then to find out that almost every bank is Monsanto and all these major corporations are all Monsanto. So it's like, it's just amazing. And, you know, I thought people should know this, and I'm trying to get the word out there that, you know, this is what's going on. And they proudly put it all over their website, and then they attack anybody that says anything about them. Chris Dorsey was bringing up about Altria, and John Lewis ripped him apart on the March Against Monsanto website, saying there's no connection, there's no connection. But Altria is Philip Morris, and Philip Morris is Monsanto. So, I mean, all this stuff that if there's no connection, you're supporting 4-H. What's the connection there? 4-H is Monsanto. So, you know, you're really pushing a what is known as a false flag here. You're flying the enemy's flag. It's trying to say, well, I'm supporting 4-H, but not Monsanto. Well, 4-H and Monsanto being one and the same, you just may as well say, hey, I support Monsanto. And then instead of trying to get rid of these GMOs and going against Monsanto, they're trying to push to label everything. Let's label everything. And it just started rubbing, like, sounding more and more like propaganda as I looked into it. And I'm trying to find out more and more, and everybody's running away. So
now I see on John Lewis's Facebook page that he is currently working with the Virginia Department of Health. The health education specialist is his title. And underneath that, from 2011 to present as well, he is the director of community engagement coordinator at Renew Richmond, which was received funding through the 4-H from Monsanto, correctly? Is that a correct assessment?
From what I'm finding out, yes. I mean, I that's where I'm, where everything's leading me to. I'm still doing a lot of investigating, and I'm hitting a lot of brick walls.
Now, John Lewis, when he was speaking, he was pushing labeling, correct? Why don't you tell us about his agenda with labeling GMO?
Well, his speech pretty much says everything. I had put the video up of the speech that he gave, and it was all, everything was, we need to get to label these things. These things really need, it's like, you know, let's label everything. Labeling is a good thing, and it just keeps coming off as, why do we want to label these things? If we're against it, we want it gone. I don't want it labeled. Because labeling, they can become, it can, people can mislabel things or not put stuff on the label. And, you know, it's, and plus the fact that the GMO crops that are pollen, they hit a non-GMO plant and automatically corrupt it and make it a GMO plant. So it's, the labeling this stuff is ridiculous. And getting people to label it, it's just go along to get along. And
now, I want to point out here, along this line of labeling, in February of 2014, I wrote an article about how the National Corn Growers Association, National Restaurant Association, National Beverage Association are all lobbying Congress to pass legislation that would require the Food and Drug Administration to create guidelines written by these three organizations for these labels. This would be a voluntary labeling of genetically modified foods and organisms as used as ingredients. So big Corn, Monsanto, the National Restaurant Association, National Beverage Association, they all want to not only write the guidelines for the labeling, make it a voluntary process, but also be in charge of the labeling. And you are absolutely correct when you state that not all of the ingredients are through FDA mandates forced to be on the label. There's a lot of things that are in our food, in processed foods especially, that don't have to be on the label. So we'll never know what is part of that food-like product. But here we have the groups that Monsanto belongs to and supports lobbying for Congress to pass legislation for the Food and Drug Administration to allow them to write the guidelines, make them voluntary, and not necessarily have to label genetically modified foods. And if the people are pushing for the labeling as well, Monsanto wins again. It's a win-win situation.
Could I make a point here? Because this is kind of like a really intelligent military strategy, more or less, is that you convince your enemy that the people that are fighting on their side are actually their enemy. And you convince your allies that the other way around, right? So this way, you've managed to infiltrate, or at least in this specific incidence in Virginia that we're talking about here, managed to infiltrate a movement that is supposed to derail an evil corporate agenda, meanwhile working for the very same scum and advocating for them without the knowledge of all the other people that are under their fold trying to expose the corruption as well.
Yeah, it's a brilliant psyop. You come in, you pretend that, you know, you fly a false flag saying, hey, John Lewis comes off, he's always smiling, he's always got a suit, he'll give you straw man arguments, because his argument when he sent an IM to me saying, you know, get my facts straight, don't attack my mother. Well, A, I didn't attack your mother. Chris Dorsey never attacked your mother. He stated a fact. You came down on him against his First Amendment, which you preach at the top of the page. Everybody's First Amendment is respected, but you come down on Chris Dorsey and say, hey, shut up, you're stupid, we don't want to hear your crap. And then you turn around and come after me and go, well, get your facts straight. Well, okay, 4-H is Monsanto, and you're flying their flag. So Monsanto is marching against Monsanto. Fund both sides of the operation. It's brilliant. They've done it through history.
There's an old quote. What was it? The best way to... what was it? Something, 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 leading the resistance. It's better to lead the resistance yourself, really. That way you control both sides of every argument.
Plus you can direct which way it goes so that you wind up on top no matter which way you win. It's a Don King boxing match. You know, he owns both boxers. So who wins at the end of the night? Don King, the boxer.
Actually, yeah. I think it's all of us that wind up going down in that fight.
Well, yeah, but the analogy, or better yet, the one I use is the WWE. Vince McMahon owns everything. He owns both the bad wrestlers and the good wrestlers. And at the end of the night, you pay Vince McMahon. It's the same thing here. Monsanto owns both sides of the argument, and they can control which way and direct people going, well, this is okay. You should push to just label it, let's just compromise, and the more you compromise, the less you have. And it's and I'm just finding this out, and it's just like, whoa. I mean, when I found out 4-H was Monsanto owned, it was that right there was like a bombshell. I had to go check, and then when it's right on Monsanto's website in plain view, that, you know, it's like the elephant in the room. And to me, I would rather there not be a movement than to have a co-opted movement. So I'm just trying to get the information out there of what I found out. And, I mean, I'm just scratching the surface right now. This is before really digging into it and see how far it goes. And I'm also wondering how far up does it go into the March Against Monsanto, the main thing. The big corporation, you know, the big movement. How far up? How many others are co-opted by Monsanto? And I feel there should, you know, people should at least ask the question and look.
It seems that this is more of a warning bell that they have gotten their tentacles into 4-H. So if money is or support is coming through 4-H for any of these marches, then it is probably money funneled through Monsanto, and that we need to be vigilant as to who is handing off support and financial support as well to this march, because it may be symptomatic of a problem that's happening across the country, if not globally.
Might I make a point as well? It's also important to expose these things once you've got proof. What's really problematic, and I see this happening to a lot of movements, is that they get derailed by infighting that's based on no substance, and others get derailed by the people that are leading them because they're scumbags and they're so good at covering their trails.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I'm thinking is going on here, because it's like, well, John Lewis can do no wrong. Look at what he's doing for the community. Look at all the good he's doing in the community. Now, I was of two minds when I posted the article, because I was looking at that going, but then that becomes a straw man argument where, okay, he's doing all this good, but if it's co-opted at the beginning and all the money's flowing through Monsanto, they can control which way everything goes. I mean, they could tell your kids then, oh, well, don't worry, GMOs aren't as bad as everybody's saying, and put all this misinformation into the children, and the children grow up believing this, and then they go to vote later on, and, you know, bing, Monsanto wins. So it's like, I'd rather stop it now if I can, you know, and get people to open their eyes and see, look at what I found out. I mean, don't believe me. I ask people, don't believe me. Go look yourself. Go look at my research. Go to Monsanto's webpage. Type in 4-H and Monsanto. You'll be surprised at all the stuff you find out. And when they proudly put it up in there, sponsored by this person and that person, and then he's constantly pushing that he's a 501c3. And Suzanne and I spoke about this earlier, and it wasn't on air, but most of the 501c3s I'm finding out are government-owned. So if a government-owned organization is pushing Monsanto, which happens to be up all the way into the White House and funding every major bank, it looks like, you know, where did we win? And I'm just asking questions, and that, you know, this is what I'm finding out. And this is just, like I said, my beginning investigation into it. I wasn't really going to go deep, but, you know, there seems to be a lot here.
I was just going to say that me and Suzanne have a bit of experience exposing psychopaths, and just wondering what kind of reactions you were getting, whether they were similar to the ones we do. Did you get a whole bunch of abuse accusations that were baseless, defamation of your character or anything like that as a result of putting out this article, either by the people that are implicated in the article or supporters of the people that are implicated in the article? And
that's actually funny. No, I have not received any response whatsoever, but they will go after Chris Dorsey and tear his character assassinate him to no end because he asked questions. And it's like, well, you're tearing apart the person that gave me information that proved factual. So is that going on? Yes. Have I personally gotten it? Not yet. I'm expecting it. I fully expected it. But it's pretty much like when I put cameras in people's faces, everybody runs away. It's like, we can't fight you right now. We'll hit you when you're not looking. Well, I'm always looking. So, you know, I'm expecting it. But as of right now, no, I haven't received any backlash from the article. As pretty much Suzanne's about the only reaction I've gotten, other than a few people have been on my blog and said, wow, you know, whoa, this is, you know, people don't know what to make of it. You know,
it's sort of challenging their belief structure, because I don't know about you, but when I first got into the quote unquote truth movement, I thought it was about truth. I thought we leave our ego and we leave our old jobs and we leave our brainwashing at the door, and we walk through the halls together, and we expose scumbaggery together alongside one another, and we stand up for our people, our nations, our rights, our freedoms. Turns out that all those bad habits that we used to have and that everybody else used to have as part of the system, they bring them in as well, and it's very difficult to get rid of them.
Oh, very much so, yes. I was the same way. I came in, oh, truth, you know, except I kind of woke up real early in life. I woke up around 1976, 78, so I've been in it a long time watching what's going on, but I've seen that. And people, they form cliques, just kind of like what this is. It's like, well, John Lewis, and they stated it in the March Against Monsanto's page on Richmond. You know, they're praising John. All hail John. John, John, John. And it's like a bunch of little kids. If you speak out against the person, they attack you. They took down some of the attacks against Chris Dorsey off of the page. I've noticed it's been censored. I do have a copy of the full page with everything that was on it, though, so I do know who I'm watching and what's going on. But I'm very familiar with what goes on around here in Richmond. I'm not a stranger to City Hall and a lot of stuff that's happened. I filled Suzanne in on some of my background. My blog mostly covers a lot of what's happened since 2005 to me and my family. And so I'm when you're surrounded and you've got nowhere to run, they've got nowhere to hide. So just aim anywhere. You're bound to hit a target. That's my motto. I've been surrounded so much that, fighting back is all I can do. And finding this stuff out, I figured this is information people really need to know. If for nothing else, open your eyes and watch what movements you're joining and what they're doing.
Yeah. It is a good idea to look before you leap. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests are Suzanne Posel and Glenn Sutphin. And we will be right back just after the break. Please check out the homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news, and Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. This is a listener-supported broadcast, and there are PayPal buttons and a bank account on the homepage there. Plus, we have a few little sponsors who are just basically listeners who wanted to donate, and I decided to give them something, back for it. The Crowdfunding Revolution, How to Raise Venture Capital Using Social Media by Kevin Lawton. And there's also an interview with him on the website, too, if you search Kevin Lawton on the search panel. The Range of Illusion, a Provinces novel by B. Holmes. A very interesting little psychological trip mind frack for you. And also the Blue Shield, protect yourself from EMF radiation and all the wireless devices and everything. Trust me, bro, you're freaking bathing in it right now. Get yourself a Blue Shield. Come on. And also Volcania Consciousness Coffee, sponsor of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and the People's Voice in the UK. And, of course, don't forget about the High Tea Cafe in New Lynn, in Auckland here, if you're a local listener to the show. And the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga as well. Truth is dirty work. You're going to need some good soap. We'll be right back.
Oh, and I'm on my way to
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and infiltrating scumbaggery, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. I'm broadcasting live from New Zealand, and, well, not live technically, it's pre-recorded, but from New Zealand, the wonderful least corrupt country in the world, according to Transparency International, who just convicted a Member of Parliament, the leader of the coalition, for a crime. And then the very next day, all of the current members of parliament basically express their support for this convicted criminal and say he's allowed to stay in power, despite the fact that he's just been convicted for a crime, which is a jailable offence. We're totally not corrupt. Totally not. You know, this isn't the Zimbabwe or the South Pacific or anything, is it, ladies and gentlemen? Not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Just keep denying it. Just keep denying it. I'm sure the problem will get better all by itself. Unlike the debt problem in this country, where we've taken on more debt in the last two terms of the Prime Ministership, who incidentally used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank in New York for 2 years as in charge of derivatives, which caused the 2008 financial crisis. Incidentally, the same year he was elected Prime Minister. And then gets us into more debt in two terms than all previous prime ministers in this country's history combined. Sound familiar, doesn't it, America? He was also running for a blue party. He's also campaigning on a platform of change and hope. You know, sounds very familiar, doesn't it? It's because it's the same system. The same players. Same football teams. Same rugby teams, they're just passing the ball to their teammates so they can keep scoring between our goalposts. Right up there, ladies and gentlemen. You know what the definition of a sodomite is? Well, the opposite of a sodomite is a catamite. Sodomites like to give it. Ketamites like to take it. And I'm convinced that there must be a group of scumbags out there somewhere who just sit down at a table together and just think, you know, how can we make the world a safer place for pedophiles, rapists, and murderers and corporate sociopaths? You know, how can we do that? And what kind of vast rafts of legislation, what kind of disinformation campaigns can we put through the radio and the television and the magazines and everybody to make them think that being a scumbag is not only okay, but it's something they should aspire to being? Somebody who they can really, really trust to lie to them all day, every day, without exception. That is just beyond my belief that people could actually have this intention. And I know why I don't have that intention, because I'm not a criminal sociopath. You know? A whole lot of people sit around and they think, man, the world's really crazy today. It's so insane. I don't understand it. They're forgetting to think like a criminal psychopath once in a while. Okay. You have a look at Monsanto. How are they behaving? Oh, well, this is just unethical. This is bad. They're making these terrible mistakes. And then switch to the psychopath mindset. Oh, that makes a hell of a lot of sense, doesn't it? You know, we're taking over. We're killing people. We're having a whole lot of fun while we're doing it. And we're getting away with the crime. Why wouldn't we? You see, that's how the world's structured. And it's not a coincidence that the structure of the world is built upon psychopathy and scumbaggery. Because that's what built this frickin' place. Isn't it? All our power structures, all of our appeal to authority, everything that we hold dear is merely a great irony and a perpetuation of a system of scumbaggery. One that needs to stop. One that we need to incur great self-observation in order to eliminate. It's not about just exposing the scumbaggery without. It's also about exposing the scumbaggery within. For if you're not willing to look at any corruption within yourself, if you're not willing to accept that it might be there if given time to germinate, then it will take you over just as surely as the scumbags in charge have taken over your country, your economy, and your health system. The enemy within, ladies and gentlemen, it's not always somebody else. Sometimes it's your own thoughts. Sometimes it's your own fears. Be cognizant of them. Don't walk into the situations blindly, or movements that tell you one thing and do another. Some critical self-analysis would be good right about now. Anyway, sorry for that long dialogue. I thought it was kind of important to have it to say it because it's been on my mind recently. My very special guests are Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com and TheUSIndependent.com, as well as RealGorillaMedia.com. And we also have a very special guest, Glenn Sutphin from LordNelga.com. .wordpress.com. That's Nelga with an L, not with two L's, and Gar as in Lady Gaga. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Now,
glad to be here.
Glenn, how often have you been interviewed before? Is this by chance your first interview?
On radio, yes. I've been interviewed in a front yard. I'm a press photographer, so I'm usually behind the camera, not in front of the camera or on mic. But this technically is my first live interview.
Another thing, this is the one thing I want to actually stretch to the audience. I do that regularly, give people their first shot on radio. I don't know why I do it, Glenn. I think it's maybe because somebody gave me a shot on radio, and I was able to make something of it. And so I want to give other people a chance to speak on radio and give them the opportunity to make something of that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely. I do appreciate it. I'm actually going to be starting my own online thing here in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to be doing live interviews and my own show. So just putting it out there now and getting getting used to it. So, I do appreciate you having me on.
Oh, no problem, man. The shakes and the jitters and the excitement and all of that kind of thing, they fade with time. And then you get absorbed with two things. Intense cynicism and large amounts of ego and defensiveness for your reputation that you're trying to protect. Those are one of the two things I've found. And you got to try and find a way to balance those out. And be real honest about them if you want to, like, stay true sort of thing. Or you could just take the money if you've got talent. I'm sorry. Dialoguing.
Well, a little money would be good. Doing this on nothing and just putting the truth out there, because I believe that the truth needs to be out there. I've opened up a lot of stories before and gotten them out to the news that people need to know that there's negative stuff going on, and it's right under your nose, and a lot of it is, you know, controlled stuff that they're doing. And why are they doing this? To corrupt society. You know, we start getting into Monsanto, you start getting into the Agenda 21 stuff that they're pushing, and is this Monsanto's way of pushing Agenda 21 through to 4-H? So you start asking a lot of questions, and I believe me, I've got a lot of ridicule from a lot of people. So I'm very used to being ridiculed and told I don't know what I'm talking about, but yet I put out information and people go, whoa, I didn't know that the 4-H was Monsanto. Well, you do now, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, I think we've both got the same affliction, and the
chemtrail flu.
The chemtrail flu. I mean, hey, look, I saw this great quote on the Walking Dead the other day, talking about, I think there was some kind of disease in their camp, right? And the doctor was risking his life to go in and treat these people. And they say, no, don't do it. You're risking your life. And he says, look, you know, you step outside these days, you're risking your life. You drink the water, you're risking your life. You eat the food, you're risking your life. And now if you breathe the air, you're risking your life. The only question is, what are you risking it for? Those people in there, they're sick. And they need help. I can help them. I can help to ease their suffering. I can help them survive. And that is worth risking my life. And you know that.
Very well said. Yes, I agree with that. I'm pretty much, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to get the word out there. It's like, I don't care. I don't get money for this. Let's open your eyes. This elephant in the room. I found the elephant in the room, you know, and it's like, here it is. I'm pointing it out. And ask people, look into my research, go look at what I found. You know, I was surprised by what I found because I wasn't expecting it. And it's right there in the open where they put it right in your face. And they, you know, they go, ha ha, you didn't see this. And most people go, no, I didn't, because I wasn't looking. And, you know, trying to wake people up and get them, you know, basically, if you are awake, you are the resistance. You have it in yourself to do something about this and get off, remove the butt from the couch and go do it. And that's pretty much what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, when you're smoking, when you're exposing the elephant in the room, the first thing people will see of the elephant in the room is this enormous elephant ass. So who's the... You said you woke up in 1978. What was the big elephant ass that you saw in 1978 that stopped you from thinking the way everybody else does?
Pretty much I realized that I was pretty much being indoctrinated in the public school system, not really being taught what I was seeing on TV. And, you know, at that point, around that point, you know, Vietnam had just ended, and, you know, I saw the fall of Saigon and saw Nixon, all that stuff, and just started looking at the world and then looking at what they were telling me. And, you know, I was a nutcase that went in the U.S. Army because I didn't want people telling me what to do.
Dodge that bullet.
Yeah, I did, didn't I? And then they threw me out because I had flat feet and a medical discharge, and they got me out of there, but not before it opened my eyes a lot to what was going on and what seeing, reading the military manuals and then seeing this in public and going, you know, you start adding two and two together and it all becomes just a big psyop, and it's who's running it. And, you know, I also ask a lot of questions, so.
That doesn't go down well in the military. It's do this. Yeah. Why? Because I told you to. But why? You know, like those annoying, petulant children. Suzanne knows what I'm talking about. They ask it why so many times that you lead yourself in a circle, and by the end you start questioning your own reality.
I'm lucky that my son will do that, but after like 6 or 7 or 10 or 12 questions, he does tell me that he's done and that the torture is over.
You're lucky. My son, he still tortures me, so, and he's almost 17, so it's.
And I would say that I'm luckier because I don't yet have a son. But I wish I did someday. That'd be really nice. Imagine being able to, I don't know. You ever seen the film Prometheus, where the guy programs an android? Right, and he says it's the closest thing to a son that I've got. And what he did with this android is he programmed it to be a lot like him. And he actually had more love for this android than he did for his own daughter. Because the android embodied his son. And I was thinking about this. What happens in current society to parents who have to raise children? Because the children take up all influences that they see up until the age of 7, where they start to kind of solidify, right? And they start to form real base habitual habits that remain fairly rigid for the rest of their life. Can you really protect your children for a full 7 years against all the television, the chemtrails, and all of this kind of stuff? You can't. I was just wondering, how do you teach somebody? How do you program anything? An organism or a computer program or simply human behavior into dealing with this reality in a healthy way from a young age and go on to do great things and not let the fact that everything's going to crap around you get you down?
Is that for me?
I don't know. I don't think anybody can answer that question because nobody's a perfect parent, are they?
No, I'm not perfect at it, but I learned with my son that he's the same, his personality when he was an infant, and still to this day, was the same as he was when I was pregnant. His sleeping patterns are still similar, and I realized he came fully formed with a complete personality. My job was to find out who he is and help him be the best version of himself that he could be, instead of taking the approach that this is a clean slate and I have to go ahead and put the personality in, put the programs in, the likes and the dislikes. I foster that with my son. I'm not perfect at all, but I think that I'll give you an example. We went out to eat, and it was a buffet, and my son went to the salad and got himself some healthy food and sat down to eat. And he did that of his own volition. And I was very, very impressed that a 7.5-year-old would eat a plate of organic healthy food. And while the rest of us went for some chicken and some other stuff, my son did this. And I hope that I'm teaching him to be the best version of himself that he can be, as flawed as I am at doing that. So I'm hoping that I'm getting as close to what you were talking about as possible.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you should mention that because I was trying to... Somebody asked me just the other weekend, we were out having a jam with a new drummer and a couple of different people, a really funky sort of like personal private sound studio that this guy has. He's a listener of the show. One of them asked me, you know, what's my idea of God? And something you said remind me of what my answer was. I said, God's kind of like me, but not me. It's almost as if everything, every part of me was done perfectly. There were no mistakes. There was no lost memory. There was no malice. There was no cruelty. There was no anger, no rage. Everything perfected. That in my image sort of thing. That's the kind of spirituality or God that I aspire to or try to do the will of, you know. I call it my higher self. And I think that's what all of our connection to God really is trying to see ourselves in that higher self state. And I think as a parent, before a child achieves cognitive ability to have those kind of thoughts and realizations, that's the kind of guiding hand that you're supposed to be, isn't it?
Sure. Whatever my son is interested in, we foster, and we turn it into a way to teach him mathematics or science or history, and he's very receptive, and so his ability, his cognitive abilities are beyond what he would, if he were in school, he would be in second grade, but I've got him already on a fourth grade level of all of the different subjects that he would be learning in school, so combining mathematics with making paper airplanes. My husband was telling me about this gentleman who was with his son, and they were making paper airplanes, and he took that as an opportunity to teach his son about geometry and physics and aerodynamics just by making paper airplanes. I think if we take that approach, that everything is a learning experience, and you can take from it what you want, and you can learn from it what you want. So maybe you don't have to make that same mistake again, like we always like to say, or maybe you can enjoy the journey of that experience and take it into your repertoire and take it for what it is. And I hope that by making each moment educational and a chance to learn and grow, that my son gets it through his thick skull that life is abundant and amazing and transformable and malleable. It's up to him to decide what he wants to create.
Yeah, I agree. My son happens to go through the indoctrination camp known as public school. But it was because I didn't have the means to homeschool him. But I still homeschooled him because when he came home, I told him, you know, look this up. They're not telling you the real story. Look it up.
It'd be quite funny. A kid comes home and, hey, Dad, look at my homework. And the dad goes, they're lying to you, man. Check it out.
Hey, that's the way I am. I'm me. I can't fix me, but I've always taught him, do the best you can. You know, always do your best. That way you don't have to say, I could have done better. And he's gotten straight A's. He's in the scholar program. He's in what everybody would call the gifted programs. He's in a lot of them. So he's very smart, very intelligent, because he's got to put up with me at home telling him all this stuff's happening, and plus what he had to come up, getting to what y'all were talking about, what he had to come up, go through in his younger life. A lot. I told Suzanne off air a lot of the stuff that I've gone through in just the past couple of years that my son's had to endure, and people telling him it's not real when it's happened right in his front yard, you know. It's amazing what people will believe what other people say over somebody that's standing right there with it happening to them. And it's just really amazing what seeing society and seeing what gets out there and what doesn't get out there. And a lot of what doesn't get out there is the truth. So
it becomes really difficult, because I've heard parents talk about the issues of being honest with your children, and I think what a lot of people have tended to do, or at least I've seen examples of it a lot of the time, is parents decide that it's not worth explaining. They're too tired, they're too exhausted, and so they rather than explain something to their child, when they ask them a question about why they're telling them to do this particular thing, they just say, just do it or else. And so learning and questioning becomes something that you get punished for. And then I think about what are the knock-on effects of that. What would that do to somebody who starts thinking for themselves, wants to learn, and start asking questions when all their experience tells them that doing that gets you in trouble, puts you in time out? You have to go to bed without dessert or something.
Well, okay, getting to that, okay, how do you tell a child that is pulled out of class, taken into a room by himself, and interviewed by a CPS pedophile, and told that your parent is doing child pornography at home on you, and you can't trust your father, and then let this child go back to class unsupervised, and then they go after the father? My son had to go through this with the CPS because of a bunch of lies, and then I'm not allowed as a parent to know what a pedophile told my son. And then this man went to jail for being a pedophile, and he was a CPS worker. So where do you tell your child? What do you tell your child then? I can't make this up to him. I can't say it didn't happen. You know, so how do you deal with that as a parent?
I think it's not a question about what a man can do or what a man can't do. It's what he will or won't do. You could lie to him, but you won't.
I couldn't. No, I couldn't lie to him because he already been interrogated and pulled out of class illegally, and they didn't follow all their rules. And then they tell me, you're a bad parent. And I'm like, I'm standing up for my child. How am I a bad parent? I want to know what a pedophile told my son. And you're telling me I'm a bad parent because some little made-up story that isn't even true, and you know you don't even have any of the facts, and then you break your own rules and then tell me I'm a bad person.
I'm sorry, Glenn, we're gonna have to go off to break here, so quickly finish your point. I don't want to cut you off.
What will a man do? I stood up and started telling the truth and saying this is what's going on, so that's what I would do.
And you found it was quite a struggle, didn't you? I saw a great picture that was come off from a skeptics meeting, and ironically enough, it says, the amount of evidence that you need to come up with in order to refute bullshit is a magnitude larger than what it takes to produce the bullshit. You know, to prove somebody's lying is so much harder than them just making up a lie. And that's quite an interesting thing. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show .com, and thank you very much for doing so. By the way, listener supported, so go to the homepage there and donate or subscribe for a few dollars a month today, and support this kind of dialogue and going on, man, because mainstream media is not going to do it, are they? We'll be right back.
When you came in, the air went out, and every shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you're enjoying all the music that you imagine in your heads, as good as it could possibly ever be. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on a wonderful little frequency that we call the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. It also is broadcast around New Zealand. We have a current number of affiliates. Infinity FM, if you're in Southland, ladies and gentlemen, Invercargill or anything like that, if you go to the webpage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, there's underneath affiliates, the little heading down on the side there, there is Rush FM, Infinity FM, and Dagsy FM, all right? And these fellas, they do, in fact, play the Vinnie Eastwood Show at least four nights a week, right? Of their own volition. They ain't getting paid to do it. they have to go out and find advertisers and keep themselves running and everything like that. And they play 2 hours out of their broadcast schedule nearly every day to get the truth out there. Good cats, eh? On live radio streams. I think there's like nearly 30 or 40 something different affiliates if you combine them all together. So this radio show is going out everywhere. It's going out on the web. It's going out on YouTube. It's going out on the airwaves. And it's growing every single day. And we have the largest online, basically, database of activist interviews, information, investigations, etc., that you will not find on any other website or radio show, for the biggest extent possible. My very special guests today are Glenn Sutphin and Suzanne Posel, and we've been talking about the Monsanto infiltration of the Anti-March for Monsanto group, and specifically in Virginia there. And we've also been talking about parenting, getting onto CPS, and various other topics. And I wanted to make the point about CPS and Child Protective Services, just like a point I make many, many times, is that in most things, particularly things that come from authority, whatever they're telling you that they're doing is the exact opposite to what they're really doing. So, somebody says, we're here to protect children. Well, they must be there to kidnap them and rape them. And sell them. And kill them. Right? And unfortunately, the statistics back up exactly what I just said. You are 9 times more likely to be sexually abused in the custody of a Child Protective Services worker than you are your own parent. 9 times more likely! That's not funny, ladies and gentlemen. These organizations get excused all the time. Oh, it's children, you know, we can't report on the court activity that involved with this stuff because for the sake of the children. You mean the children that are getting raped, the children that are getting abused, the children that are being brainwashed against their own parents? It's for their sake that we don't expose what's going on here? Is that what you're telling me, you frickin' scumbag? Where's your heart? Where's your soul? Where's your conscience? Oh, that's right. You don't freaking have any. If you ain't willing to back it up, you ain't got it. Kind of like your rights. Don't you think? Rights are like a moral backbone. If you don't use them, you lose them. It's like everything else in this world, isn't it? Glenn, Suzanne, welcome back.
Thank you.
Sorry to be laying down the real serious kind of notions on you today, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I'm just not that funny today.
Well, I think this is a very serious thing. What's going on in Richmond, Virginia, this needs to be looked at. It's a warning, like I said before. We need to look at this and make sure that it doesn't happen again. We need to look at other chapters and see if anyone has weaseled their way in and get rid of it so that the next march is purified. It doesn't have any of these infiltrators. It doesn't go with the agenda that helps Monsanto. DuPont and Monsanto and other biochemical corporations through biotech initiatives have given over $60 million to Congress to lobby for labeling. There's a reason why they want the labels. They want to write them themselves, control them, make it voluntary whether or not they admit to GMO in the food. So you have labeling coming from both sides. This gentleman, John Lewis, seems agenda-driven to me, especially when Monsanto and DuPont and all of those corporations win, no matter who, because if the federal government labels it, that supersedes all of the states' labeling passages of legislation that have already gone through in a few states. So if the people are getting the states to do it and Monsanto is getting the federal government to do it, Monsanto wins. They can label it. They don't care if we label it, because the fact of the matter is, A, not everything is on the label to begin with, and B, if they're writing the guidelines, then they win. Why are we labeling it? Like Glenn said, let's just get rid of it. Let's just get rid of it so that it's not there. We don't even have to worry about it anymore.
Some form of purge.
Yeah, pretty much. Just go. I mean, there are countries overseas that are burning their crops and sending the shipments back and saying we will not accept it. And the U.S. is the only one going, hey, we'll give it to the people. Why not? It doesn't make much sense unless you start looking in deeper, like in the Agenda 21, and then you start coming up with all reasons why.
Hey, there, Glenn, are. Have you noticed that there's a circular motion here? Like, you look into Monsanto, and then that comes into Agenda 21, and then Agenda 21 goes into Codex Alimentarius, which goes straight back into Monsanto again.
Correct. Yeah, and all of it's interconnected. And then you start looking around, and people go, it's like, no. But then you got to find out, okay, then you start going, who's funding all this? Where is all the money? And then you start offshore banks and all that, you know, all the other stuff, and it all starts coming back in together. That's because you're starting to wake up and pull back and seeing more of the dots on the picture, and the picture is becoming clearer. This is all part of little things that are conspiracy theories, because that's all I ever get called is a conspiracy theorist for all the stuff I know. And it's like, then explain it to me, because the only way I can explain it starts forming cobwebs, and Monsanto's here doing this, and it reaches out over into here, over to like Hasbro, and then this person over here is over there, and it's all interconnected, and whoa. What's going on? Well, you don't ask those questions because we don't want to answer the questions.
Well, not only do they not want to answer the questions because they might be implicated in some kind of crime, or they're completely innocent and they don't want to ask those questions because, let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, it's really painful to admit that you've been lied to and you believed it for so freaking long, maybe your entire life, you know. Repeat after me. Yeah. Okay, I admit it. Okay, I admit it. I was an idiot. I was an idiot. See? It's not that hard, is it? Once you admit that you don't know everything, you're suddenly able to learn things. And if you're looking for the truth in something, I mean, I relate it to, I don't know if you've ever been to a state fair or an Easter show or something like that. You know how they got their big rides with the lights and stuff, and they're spinning around, and they're really fancy and everything like that. Well, if you walk into a state fair and you're looking for who runs the show, you'll go to the first thing goes, candy floss vendor. Excuse me, are you running the show? You know, he's got these big things of candy floss, and they're really brightly colored, and they're very distracting and attention, and they're very sweet. And the guy goes, no, sorry, I don't actually run the show. Go find somewhere else. So you go to the next ride, and it's a really, really big, fabulous, massive ride with huge lights, and that goes fast and fast and round, and it's really distracting and really fun. And he asked the guy, is it you that's running the show here? And he goes, no, I'm sorry, it's not me. So you go to one of the stalls where you have to toss rings onto something, and you ask the guy there, excuse me, are you running the show here? Because you seem to be making lots of money, you got all these possessions and everything like that, are you running the show? And he goes, no, it's not me, I'm not running the show, bro. And you find out that you spend all your time looking for the things that are brightly coloured, the things that appear right out in front of you, the things that you're encouraged to participate in, are not the ones running the show. The ones that are running the show, you never see walking around. They're in a little office somewhere. No lights, no magnificence, no opulence. Barely any attention gets paid to them at all. Meanwhile, everybody gets distracted by the big rides, the bright lights, and the crazy clowns.
That is the crux of the problem. We get caught up in the marketing and the advertising and the rah, 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 let's do this, an idea whose time has come, all the slogans, anything to get us to participate. We don't sit back and think about what we are participating in, whether or not we've seen this type of tactic used before. Ask why it's being put into your face and what the implications of it are, what the consequences are, the positives, the negatives. We don't critically think, we just react to everything that happens in front of us. And because of that, we make very poor decisions.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. Like I said, last year I was all, you know, mesmerized, like, wow, okay, well, hey, 400 people, we're going to do something. And then this year there were just a lot of questions because they kind of pulled it away from the populated areas. We can't go down to where we were in Carytown, which was very effective because the stores complained. So we got to meet in this little park out in the middle of nowhere with police surrounding everything. And, you know, and then the march did veer off course and went past the Altria building, which was kind of ironic. It's like, well, why are you so against Altria, but you're marching right in front of the building? And then they wound up in the middle of a parking lot somewhere away from public. And it was specifically like, well, we'll take a different route. And it's like, well, what was all that about? You know, you start asking questions. And if you ask questions, it's like, what are you against small farms? What are you, you know, what, you're not supporting us? And it's like, yeah, not really. And your tactics are starting to push people away. And a lot of people are asking questions. And I'm just happen to be one of the ones going, well, look at what I found. Maybe this is why they're doing that. You know, I don't know if they're compartmentalized, if they're brain damaged, or if they're just not paying attention, which could be the case. But I doubt it because all the stuff I'm finding, it's like this is starting to smell like a organized operation like they did the Occupy movement here in Richmond. They co-opted that and brought in a bunch of people and made it what it was, which was nothing. So I'm, you know, and I'm asking questions and trying to find answers. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they get you one way or the other, you know, they'll either, bribe you in and give you lots of wonderful possible treats, etc., for being corrupt and doing this kind of thing. Or you might be a little bit brain damaged and too stupid to realize what's actually really going on. You believe the lies of these scum that are actually the real corrupt ones that you're working for, and you believe them lock, stock, and barrel, and you defend them against all accusers and everything like that. Or you really don't think about it at all. At all. You know, you never actually just stop for a moment and just go, have I become some form of scumbag? No? No? Okay, I'm still doing the right thing. Good, good, good. Because there's no self-analysis in those positions. There's only rewards, titles, etc. And I don't like that corporate ladder business. And there's a corporate ladder in the political scheme as well, don't you think? All you're trying to do is get a higher paycheck, more power, more influence, and a fancier title. Again and again and again. And then you realize, at the end of it, that none of these titles mean jack in your real life. They're just a title. They're kind of like the name on a car. What matters in the car is the engine. What matters is how comfy them seats are, bro. Doesn't necessarily matter what the name is. So if you call yourself the president, you call yourself the prime minister, or you call yourself the CEO, it doesn't change the fact that you're just a clunker.
Yep, pretty much. It's what's inside of you that matters, not what you know, how much money you got in the bank, because we all know the money's worthless. So having a bunch of papers in the bank, whoopee, doesn't do much for you. It's what you at the end of the day, you have to look at yourself in the mirror, and that's, you know, and you have to look at your children and go, what am I leaving for them? This is more for them, not for me. I'm trying to. I don't want this stuff all over the place for my grandchildren. You know, I want it gone. And then this movement comes along and we'll get rid of it. Oh, okay. Let's just label it. That's not getting rid of it. You know, and then you start looking deeper and it's just, wow. And then this is more and more. It's just like you said, I'm seeing corporate scumbags in suits, smileticians. They smile at you, you know, the smiling politicians, they always smile, always got a smile on their face, always in suits. And that's what I'm seeing here. And it's like, whoa, time out. I'm not supporting this, but I'm not against the march against Monsanto. I am fully against Monsanto. And this is smelling like Monsanto. So, you know, I'm just calling what I'm smelling.
Yeah, I think it's important for the audience to understand this is isolated to Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, that we know of right now. And to me, the reason why I wanted Vinny to bring this gentleman on, bring Glenn here to talk to you, is because if this is happening in other cities, if this is happening somewhere else, we need to root it out and get rid of it. Because the idea behind March Against Monsanto is a good idea, and we should be boycotting, not supporting, and getting these corporations out of the government, out of the biotech industry, out of our grocery stores. We shouldn't even be wondering when we pick up an apple whether or not it's genetically modified. That shouldn't even be a concern of ours. We should be able to pick up the produce that we buy and the foods in the store that we buy that don't have chemicals, that don't have genetically modified organisms in them, so that we can just use food for what it was intended, to keep us healthy. We don't even want this here. Like Glenn pointed out earlier, labeling just kicks the can down the road. It keeps the power structure going. And it just makes it easier for them to continue doing business as usual. We need to get rid of the genetically modified organisms in our food, period. They use genetically modified organisms in our sweeteners. You know, I don't know about you, but I wrote an article today about Truvia. And not to get this off the subject, but this is what's important. Truvia can be used as a pesticide, as well as being given a general allowance of safety by the FDA. Not that it's been proven safe to use, just that it's been given a general understanding that it would be safe.
You know,
it can
this
be used
reminds
as a
me.
Pesticide.
This reminds me of a scene from Fargo. Hey, that thing looks like a pesticide. Oh yeah, in what way? Oh, just in a general kind of way.
Exactly. So if we have this as our option for a sweetener, and we have genetically modified organisms in nearly everything that we buy to consume, we have a huge problem. We need to get rid of this. People were telling me, well, baking soda can be used as a pesticide. Truvia is safe, just as safe as baking soda. Okay, fine. If that's what you think, that's fine. You go ahead and think that.
Can I ask, has anybody ever gone to a cafe to have a coffee or something like that, and they have a little sachet that says glyphosate on it, or you know, maybe a little spray bottle with some kind of a general industrial poison or something, you know, like some Windex, and you put that in your coffee as like just to sweeten it or something?
Or like when you eat McDonald's hamburgers that are dipped in the same thing that you clean your windows, the Windex. So, you know, next time you have a burger at McDonald's, just think about cleaning your windows.
Yeah. Apparently the buns are really good. They function as a sponge. In fact, there is a video that my wife showed me the other day of a dude who got himself a Big Mac. Okay. And he grabbed the patties out of it and squeezed them into a cup. He filled up half a cup of grease with just
That's disgusting.
Two burger patties. And so he had the remaining burger there, like, you know, the lettuce and the buns and everything. And he goes, just for effect. And he pours this half a cup of grease all over the burger. It's just, oh my God, no. Just the visual. Like, you guys, I'm just telling you about it. You didn't see it. Oh my God. And this is like what's in every freaking Macca's patty. That's unbelievable.
Well, think about this. At Taco Bell and at Burger King, you could be eating horse meat. Now, I'm not saying that horse meat is good for you or bad for you. I don't know. But I want to know that my all beef patty is cow, because that's what I assume when I hear all beef. I don't want to assume that it's all beef from a horse. And so we need to know what's in our food. If we don't have food that has extra not good things in it, then we don't have to worry about that.
Correct.
Maybe this is the reason why we're growing enough food to feed 11 billion people, is because about 7 billion of them are being poisoned already.
Pretty much.
Well, or Codex Alimentarius, that says that nutrients, vitamins, and minerals are bad for your body and you should avoid them at all costs.
Yes, I could just imagine Sherlock Holmes saying that vitamins and minerals are bad for you. It's Alimentarius, dear Watson.
Yeah. No doubt. Craziness. Well, that's the way the world is anymore. You know, you got doctors that are, you know, making people sick. I mean, they've done that to me. I've been poisoned by their so-called medicine that until I stopped taking it, it did not stop killing me. And, you know, it's like, you know, you go to a doctor to get well and they poison you. You know, it's like, I ain't going there. So you really have no choices anymore. So you have to, you know, you get poisoned no matter which way you go on the planet. So it's like, but if we can get rid of it and limit it and get, you know, start breaking the chain of events, you know, get Monsanto out of the government. That's one big thing. Get them out of the bank. I mean, look at all the banks that are co-opted by Monsanto. I think that was the first one in my list, was the list of all the banks. It was like, whoa, I don't think there's a single bank that isn't Monsanto driven. So, you know.
The point is to stop participating in our own tyranny. Don't buy the products, all of them. Just stop buying them. I was telling Jack Blood this last week. If we took the money that we spend every month in health insurance and reallocated those funds back to our grocery bill, we could afford better food for ourselves, and we wouldn't need the doctor, and we wouldn't need to pay the premium anyway. So think about it, folks. Just restructure your brain a little bit. Take money that you're wasting with the health insurance lobby and Obamacare and all that, and wherever you live, in whatever country, whatever lobbyist you have to pay for health insurance, they're not going to cover what happens to you anyway. And put that in your grocery bill. Put that $200, $300 into buying good food from your local farmer, from your local butcher, from your local dairy farm, from your local rancher. And think about it. You won't have to worry because your food will keep you healthy. That's what it was intended to be. Food is medicine.
Right. And start your own backyard garden. I've been trying, you know, getting mine going. And, you know, I'm not against people that are sustaining themselves, like he's commented, oh, you're against that. No, I'm 110% for that. I'm 200% against people lying to me. And being lied to and directly in my face lying, that's, you know, I'm totally against that. And then you're starting to smell like, I'll be nice about it, but you're starting to smell pretty bad. So, you know, people need to know this. And, you know, is it a problem that goes all the way to the top? Because I know the government's corrupt from the top down and the bottom up. And, you know, and if one, I can't put one movement, one little area, say Richmond, and go, well, the whole thing is bad, but it brings into question, hey, you better check.
Well, it's when you don't look, okay? That's when you get into trouble. I mean, how do so many accidents on the road get caused? You know, you're just not looking where you're going. You're not paying proper attention. And people think that they've got to pay more attention how they're driving on the road than the direction their country itself is going. You know, isn't that interesting? Considering there's a hell of a lot more hazards to your country than there are in any road, anywhere. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests, Glenn Sutphin from Richmond, Virginia, and Suzanne Posel from an undisclosed Occupy News bunker of some description. Occupy corporatism bunker, that is. Speaking of Occupy, it was pretty intense, wouldn't it? You know, you ever look at all those Occupy protesters? They were intense. Maybe they weren't pretty, but anyway, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the final segment today on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for your continued support. I've been very, shall we say, lax on getting new shows, new videos, and things of that nature out there. I've gone through a bit of an adjustment period, going from being on a network that's live, where you can just easily record the live stream and quickly edit it afterwards, to recording and organizing absolutely everything yourself, having no board op, no producer, and more or less just kind of like fielding and doing about 20 different jobs by yourself, whereas recently, up until now, I only had to do 10 jobs by myself. And was getting a heck of a lot more done. So I just got to work into a rhythm to it, and I apologize for to everybody for the lack of activity on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I mean, sometimes there'll be a week without a new broadcast going up there, and the YouTube channel's in an even worse shape. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. I've got to do my work. And I'm so sorry that I've let all of you down. Okay. Back to our guests, Suzanne Posel and Glenn Sutphin. We started off talking about Monsanto, and then we went on to talking about Agenda 21, which led on to Codex Alimentarius, which led back to Monsanto, and which leads back to the lobbyists, which leads back onto the Capitol Hill, which leads on to the Trilateral Commission, which leads on to David Rockefeller, which leads on to the Rothschild banking dynasty, which leads on to ancient Egypt, which leads on to ancient aliens, which leads on to... You know, it's like really weird how all of these things are all interconnected in the minds of some people, right? And what people are in danger of is assuming that one equals causality to the other, okay? There's some disparate connections with everything, but it doesn't mean everybody's in on it. There are useful idiots out there, as Lenin said. And believe me, there are many idiots that happen to be useful. Make no mistake, I'm probably one of them. I might be believing in something that I don't even know about, as yet. You know what I'm saying? Always be prepared to question that possibility. Am I doing the right thing? Am I just being a big idiot here? It's like the ballad of the cosmic schmuck. How do you know if you've become the cosmic schmuck? Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot. If you never question, you never sit down and you think to yourself, am I the cosmic schmuck? Am I actually the big idiot in all of this? Have I got it all wrong? Have I been living my life for somebody else's design, for somebody else's purposes? Have I believed that I didn't have the power to change or create things in and of themselves by myself without technically needing anybody's help in order to begin doing it? Am I doing the right thing? Do a whole lot of synchronicities and really interesting, fabulous coincidences and amazing, helpful people just come into my life exactly when I need them, every single time? Why is it that that happens? Is it because I'm not lying to myself? Is it because I'm not doing damage to the flow of the universe? I don't know. I just assume that if you're doing the right thing, then the universe gets the hell out of your way and allows you to do it. However, if you're doing the wrong thing, you get a lot more rewards for doing so. It's all about what your intention is, and you'll get rewards on both sides of the fence. You can either be rewarded with knowing that you're on the right side of history, and that when the books are written, there might be a little bit of grain of truth in there about you someday, that you actually tried to help, whether or not you were going to win, whether or not you knew that what you were doing was going to be successful, just because it was the right thing. Is justification enough for some people? And in my opinion, that's the only justification you really, really need. Isn't right. This actually happened to me, guys. I was about to quit my job doing the salesman. I'd just been given the biggest paycheck of my life, you know. I was like 22, I think. 24, maybe. Frick, have I? 24 maybe, right? And I got like $4,000 paycheck for the month, cash, after tax, and $11,900 worth of shopping mall vouchers for any shop in the entire mall, including a supermarket. And so I was like, I called up my friend John Eisner, who edits this magazine, Uncensored. And I said to him, man, I just really feel like quitting my job. I had like a head full of Alex Jones and Death of the New World Order kind of thing those days. And John just asked me this question, whether or not I'm going to quit my job, you know. Does it feel right? Does it feel right? And by God, it did. And by God, I quit. And by God, here I am today, doing the exact same thing that I did before. Stopping what I was doing, working for the man, and start doing the right thing. Not because I got financial rewards from it, but because it's the right thing. You guys vibing with that?
Yeah, that's what I do every day. I don't get paid for this. I enjoy when I look into a story and find out that stuff that they don't mention, or they briefly mention, like it's no big deal. And I love bringing that forth because it's important. It's important for us to understand that what they were talking about 6 months ago, and I see it. 3 months ago, they were talking about this. They just started talking about it today, like it's brand new information. No, they're programming you. They keep reintroducing information. The same thing you do with children. You repeat yourself over and over again every single day. And then eventually, hopefully, something sticks. I love exposing that. And I'm grateful that people want to listen to me on the radio. And I'm grateful that I'm able to go on television and do interviews as well. But I truly love what I'm doing because this information is so important. And I know that in the hands of the right person, they're going to read that article and say, I can change that. And they're going to. Information is only good in the hands of those who can do something about it. And so I choose to be that facilitator between the information and the person who can do something about it. So when I write an article and I publish it, I know that somebody's going to read it at some point in time, and they're going to change that. And I'm grateful that I could bring the information that will help change what's actually happening in our world.
Yeah, I agree. That's pretty much why I started my blog was, you know, I needed to get information out there that I was finding. And it's like, well, you know, who better to do it than me? You know, and I just started doing it and found the more I do it, the easier it becomes. And I definitely don't get any money for this. I bring it out there because people need to know what's going on. They need to wake up and basically smell the roses, which are sitting right on the elephant's lap in the room. And you're looking at the vase and you're looking at the roses, but you're missing the elephant holding it. So you got to kind of, you know, and I don't like people lying to me and telling me I have to obey them and, you know, trying to sell me liberty and sell me freedom and all this other stuff that they push on you. And it's like, you people are beyond help sometimes, but I still try to help and show them the way. And that's pretty, like I said, that's what my blog evolved out of, was nobody was getting the news that was happening in the real world and they weren't believing it. And it was my duty basically to say, hey, this is what's going on. This is what I found out.
You're not selling me liberty. You're not selling me freedom. You're selling me out.
Yeah.
And I think could I just say one thing, Suzanne? The whole point that we're actually trying to deal with here is appealing to authority, expecting somebody else to solve our problems. Have you ever noticed that sometimes the actions that you take to prevent certain problems from occurring are exactly the very action that needs to take place in order for that problem to occur?
Absolutely. It is a self-esteem issue. We are isolated. We do not communicate with each other the way that we understand. Most communication is non-verbal. So how can you communicate properly through text messages, through Skype chats, through telephone calls on your cell phone? Cell phone calls. Isn't that funny? I remember telephones. I remember rotary phones. We do not communicate. We do not interact with each other properly. We are isolated. We are not part, except in a virtual sense, which we don't understand how that works, but we are engaging in it because we live on the internet. So if we return back to talking to each other, engaging each other, if anything, use the technology, turn on the video chat and at least see each other so you understand each other. We can change how we perceive. And if we change how we perceive, then we don't accept certain things like abuse on any level, whether it's in our relationship, at work, or by our government. We don't accept poisoned food. We don't accept substitutes for things that we know naturally occur. We don't accept being lied to by the media or anyone else. And so when we stop accepting this, when we build our self-esteem, when we start communicating properly and understanding each other, these things will go away simply because we will not engage in them any longer.
And every language on earth has the word no. And it's probably one of the shortest words. And it's also, incidentally, one of the most powerful.
Well, definitely. I do not comply. No, I do not agree with you. You are not my ruler. So, yeah, that's, you know, what I do not comply with your orders that are baseless. And in a free society, you don't order people to obey you unless they are slaves. And then that kind of defeats your free society, though. So it's really, you know, it's all about the person standing up and what can little me do. Well, you can make some noise. You can stand up and say, hey, I question this. What's up? I want some answers. And go down to your city hall and say, hey, you know, I don't comply with your stupid orders that you're pushing out. You're criminals. Criminals need to be brought to justice. Stop this. Well, they're too big to put in jail. Where did that come from? I've never heard of anybody too big to put in jail. We beheaded kings in the past. What, weren't they too big to put in jail? You know, and question your reality, too. Look around you and don't believe everything that's in front of you is real. And that's pretty much what I've been doing, is like trying to brush this veneer off of some of this stuff and go, what's beneath the surface? And sometimes that's all it takes to open up a big can of worms.
It's one person standing up in front of the others that gives the others the encouragement to stand up themselves, knowing that they're not alone anymore. It reminds me of something that, Mark Twain said something along the lines of, at first a patriot is ridiculed and hounded, yeah, and thrown out of society, and nobody's on board with him. And it's only once his cause is proven true and successful does everybody else suddenly jump on board, because then it costs nothing to be a patriot.
Yeah, precisely. And, you know, I've read all this stuff through history, and history's been made sometimes by one person just saying, hey, this isn't right. You know, and boom, the whole thing changes. Because people go, well, yeah, I've agreed with that, but I wasn't willing to stand up. But since you're putting a big target on your back, hey, now I can stand up, because they're going to hit you before they hit me. So if I have to be the target, make me the target. I'm used to being a target.
Especially coming from the days of when the VC owned the night. And incidentally, you notice, I don't know if you've noticed, but I have, the propensity of veterans now kind of coming against the government. And it's sort of like people who are at the coalface who have actually been treated the worst are often some of the most likely to wake up. The problem is the survival rates aren't very good, because there's often a lot of damage that occurs not only on the battlefield but off the battlefield using psychotropic drugs and things of that nature. Now, Suzanne? The suicide is actually more likely to kill a current U.S. serviceman than any other factor. No, accidents, roadside bombs, insurgents, anything like that, nothing. No. It's not the highest killer of US troops. It's now psychotropic drugs that they're giving all the US troops for the traumatic stuff that they've had to do that make them want to kill themselves. And they give them drugs that help them with that.
Yes. Some of these veterans are on 9 to 12 prescription psychotropic antidepressant Paxil Zoloft. 9 to 12 at a time, simultaneously, all together. They're taking a cocktail. What do you think that does? Well, we don't know. That's the problem. They have bad science claiming that there's mental disease. There is no scientific proof that there's mental disease in the brain or the body, period. They've got brain scans. Well, think about it, folks. If you were walking and I was taking shot after shot after shot after shot after shot, in one shot your left leg would be up, in the next shot your right leg would be up. That's the same mode of thinking that they look at when they think, when they see these brain scans. Well, something lit up here and something lit up there, and it wasn't lit up here and it wasn't lit up there. It must mean that there's ADHD. That does not mean anything. They don't understand how the neural net operates. They don't even know where memories are stored, folks. They know that it's in multiple areas, but it doesn't always necessarily happen in the same sequence or in the same areas. Some people remember things differently. Guess what? It happens in different parts of the brain lit up to form that memory. They don't understand. That's why we have the brain mapping project with Obama. That's why DARPA wants to put computer implants in the brains of volunteers and soldiers so that they can find these mental diseases. That's why they have the soldiers sign off on PTSD, which is just as made up as ADHD, so that they will get more benefits when they're released. But guess what? Now they're labeled. Yep. It's a racket.
And then they're cataloged because they have all that information, and then they're hunted down and not taken care of. I know for a fact about what's going on with that from veterans. I've seen how they treat veterans, and it's disgusting. And having been in the service for a little bit and then out, I seen both sides of it, and I do not care for what they're doing. And it's, you have to stand up and say, hey, stop this. We pay these congressmen more than we ever pay any veteran, and that's beyond ridiculous. Congress has become a retirement home for politicians. Every form of government, it's ridiculous. We pay them, and then they want a pay increase for doing what? For screwing us over? I mean, and then you start questioning it, and then you have a mental disorder. I must have ODD, I think is what it is now, isn't it? The new one where you question the government, so you have a mental disorder.
Oh, that's oppositional defiance disorder.
Yeah, you question stuff, so you automatically are mentally ill.
Therefore I'm ill.
Yeah, pretty much. And if you're breathing, whoa, watch out.
Now, here's the thing. How many psychiatrists who prescribe people with mental illness diagnose people with mental illness and then prescribe them drugs that cause mental illness in order to help them with their mental illness, which they can't cure with the drugs, which cause mental illness, of course. How many of them would be able to go through their own psychological profile or psychiatric breakdown, etc., and come up with no disorders of their own? How about, I don't know, God complex disorder? How about crazy as a rat in a tin shit house disorder? Is anybody listening?
How about
you can just make them up.
The House representatives on Capitol Hill, who are psychiatrists, a week after the Santa Barbara shooting, House Representative Mike Thompson, who is a psychiatrist for 3 decades before elected to the House of Representatives, we have a psychiatrist sitting there. And he has these ad hoc groups that he belongs to where he's educating Congress, senators, and House representatives on mental health and psychiatry. Of course, he's a psychiatrist. He's funded by the psychiatric community, by hospitals, by the pharmaceutical industry, of course. And he's pushing this bill to have mental health as part of gun control and getting rid of gun violence. Folks, this is what we're not discussing. Psychiatry is a sham. And it figured out with the asylums in the early 1900s that they could use Thorazine to drug people. And they've been drugging people ever since. They came out of the asylums and they've come into our backyards. And they're in Capitol Hill, sitting there elected by somebody, maybe you, and they are making decisions on your mental health based on a lie. There is no scientific evidence to show that there is any mental disease at all in the brain or the body. So guess what, folks? It's a lie. And your elected officials, elected or not, we're not going to discuss that part, but those people sitting there that were chosen are former psychiatrists who are working for the psychiatric community and the pharmaceutical industry to make sure that you are drugged. That is the truth about gun violence.
The lunatics have taken over the asylum. Yeah. The lunatics are the ones in charge of prescribing everything now. And wasn't there knives in a car used in that one accident, the shooting incident, and they're going off on the gun? The gun didn't kill. The gun physically killed the people, yes, people. But it was the lunatic that pulled the trigger that did the crime, not the weapon. You sit the weapon down, that weapon becomes unfunctional. It will not kill anybody until picking back up. Period. That's the truth. That's reality. The person that's on the psychotropic drugs that got denied by women or whatever his excuse was to go off, that went off, is the person that needs to be blamed for all these crimes, not the weapon. And
it's also the drugs, like that gentleman, Sergeant Bales, in 2012, when he killed 16 Afghan citizens, he was on mefloquine, which is a vaccine for malaria. It causes psychotic episodes. Guess what? He had one. He's sitting in jail right now when the gentleman who administered the mefloquine to him is free.
Oh, yeah. I fully, you know, like I said, that there's another point, you know, it's the drugs. It's not, it enhances the person's ability to go do the bad thing they want to do, but it also makes them quite often do this. I notice for a fact, having been on several of these drugs that they gave me for my seizure disorder. And I mean, there are times I've done stuff that it was like, it was not me that was doing it because it was the drug. I stopped taking the drug, got cleaned up from their drugs. All these episodes went away. So
it's like they turn you into a passenger in your own body. You know, like you can't stop yourself.
Correct. Yes. Very, very. You're a prisoner inside your own body and you can't do anything about it. And you're witnessing this from this third person perspective that it removes you. And, you know, but does that remove the your guilt in that case? Because they can turn that around and go, well, since you weren't guilty of this, it's a slippery slope on all this.
Well, here, I have a friend who's on Zoloft. She's been on it for about 2 years now, and she's going to continue using it for the rest of her life. But she has told me that it disassociates her from her feelings. And in any situation, she realizes she's not behaving normally. She doesn't get happy or sad. She's just kind of even keel the whole entire time. Well, take that to an extreme. You have someone who is chemically induced to lack empathy. Not that they know that they shouldn't be upset, sad, angry, happy, frustrated, but they just can't feel it. The receptors in their brain have been inhibited. They just can't do it. So if they don't have those feelings, our feelings, our respect for each other, our care for each other, is what keeps us from doing really horrible things to each other. If we don't have that switch, what would we do?
Yeah, definitely agree. You know, it messes people up, and they know this. It's not like they don't know this because they put it on their warnings that they won't let you. They don't want you to read because, you know, another thing that they put right in front of you, but expect you not to pay attention to. And that's pretty much the trick we're looking at here: is everything's put in front of you, but you look at it, but you don't look at it. You see it, but you don't see it. It's just a sham, and you believe what you're told until the fog starts lifting and you start going, well, wait a minute, this isn't exactly what they're telling me. And then it's your choice. Do you keep going or do you just shut up and roll over and go back to sleep and hit the snooze button?
It's not just, this is not how they're telling me it's going to work. It's working the exact opposite. You know, it's like, I'm feeling a little bit depressed and I think like I might kill myself. Here, try this drug. Are there any side effects? Yeah, maybe a little bit of weight loss or something like that. But don't read the warning labels that say, warning, it might make you kill yourself.
Exactly. Oh, well.
Unfortunately, Suzanne has another scheduled interview coming right up and she needs at least a good 10 minutes break. And conveniently, we've come to the exact end of another fabulous episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ladies and gentlemen, check out Glenn Sutphin's website, lordnelga.wordpress.com, like Helga, but with a G, lordnelga.wordpress.com. That was kind of funny, the pronunciation there. And Suzanne Posel, occupycorporatism.com. Thank you very much, guys. And also thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Bear in mind, listener-supported broadcast. So if you could please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and sign up for a regular monthly donation of $5 to $10. We'd very much appreciate that. Thank you very much. We'll see you again sometime.